January 13th, and we'll go ahead and start the Boulder Town Planning Commission meeting. We'll go ahead and start with approving the agenda. Does anyone have any comments on the agenda?
Nope.
I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the agenda for the meeting tonight.
Now, I'll second the motion on the agenda. Any comments? Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
John, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Oh, I might as well turn this off if we're not going to use it.
So we also, if everyone's had a chance to look at the December minutes, does anyone have any comments on the December minutes? Okay, so we'll go ahead and I'll make a motion to approve the December minutes.
And I'll second that motion. Since there's no discussion, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye. This is voting if you are here for the December meeting. So Shelley and Tina do not need to vote here.
John, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye. So we'll go ahead and every year at this time, every 2 years, we elect a new chair for the Planning Commission. And I'm going to go ahead and suggest Matt Cochran and make a motion to vote Matt in as the new Planning Chair Commission, or I can't think of the word, chair.
John seconds that.
All in favor?
Matt Cochran, aye.
And Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Shelley, aye.
Who was that? So Shelley. Since we have...
Do I vote on these? Do you need me tonight? Alternative?
We'll get to this, Shelley, in a little bit, but right now, as an alternate member, you're totally, we want you in all the discussions, but if there's a quorum here, you don't have a voting right at that point, so.
Okay, and I didn't know if you had a quorum or not yet, so
yeah.
I will be quiet from now on.
No, you don't have to be quiet. We want to hear what you have to say, we don't need the vote, yeah. So, I'm going to take the reins, Colleen, officially, and now we need to nominate a vice chair. And basically, the role of vice chair is simply to run the meetings if I'm absent or my Zoom cuts out. So,
you don't always hit things in the way that they do it.
And if those who are the public, please mute yourself here. Thank you. So just out of experience alone, I'd like to nominate Colleen just as vice, because she's been running a meeting for a while here. Would you accept that, Colleen?
Sure.
Okay, so I make a motion to have Colleen Thompson as vice chair. Someone want to second that?
Yeah, I'll second that motion.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye. Okay, Matt, so it's a new chair. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I want to officially thank Colleen for the last bunch of years through... it's been tumultuous with pandemic, with three changes of zoning administration, and with some pretty tough challenges in the PC. And, you've done a great job. So thank you for holding it together for us. And I want to welcome all the PC members, but the newest, especially Tina and Shelley. Welcome to the wild seas of the Planning Commission. Hang on, here we go. So from there, next on the agenda is to set the regular meeting schedule, okay? And so what I'm proposing is we stick with what we've got, which is the second Thursday of each month, running at 6 p.m. till the spring time change, where it bounces forward to 7 p.m. start time, and then in the fall back at the next daylight savings back to 6. Do we need to vote on this, Peg?
Yes.
Okay, so that would be the proposal, and is there any discussion on that before we make a motion on it? Does anyone have any other thoughts? Good. Okay, then I'm going to make an a motion to retain the regular meeting schedule that we already have.
I'll second that.
Sure. Okay, so yeah, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Carlson, aye.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next on the agenda, Peg, I'm going to turn it over to you for Open Public Meetings Act and ethics review.
Okay. Hold on a sec. Okay, so this is going to be the short and sweet version. Starting with the Open and Public Meetings Act, OPMA. And this is a state mandate that all public bodies receive this quote unquote training on OPMA once a year. And there are three main elements of Open Public Meetings Act. One, the three elements are meetings slash hearings. The second one is notification. And the third has to do with record keeping. So basically meetings, it's the distinction between what is a public meeting and what is a public hearing. And basically anytime a public body is convening and there is a quorum, it is by definition a public meeting. And all public meetings require, they need to be open, they need to be public, they require notification and all the rest of the rules that go with that. A meeting does not include if three of you happen to run into each other at a party and you talk about what a great meeting it was. You know, I mean, that's not a public meeting. Public meeting is when you are convening for the purpose of discussing business. So if three of you happen to meet in the coffee shop and you start talking planning commission business and making some decisions about how you're going to vote next time, that would be illegal. That would constitute an illegal public meeting. So in practical terms, that's probably the biggest thing you need to remember is in a small town, you're always going to be in a social setting with each other, planned or unplanned. And you can certainly make mention of some aspect of a meeting, but you can't talk business is the main thing, or make any decisions. The same thing really happens online. We exchange a lot of information online. The bulk of that, if it's part of the meeting materials, ends up on the website, which I post, as you'll see tonight, some of the items that John sent and so forth. But there are no like discussions or decisions to be made either online or in any kind of a physical setting. So public meetings, again, distinction between that, the public has a right to sit in and listen to the proceedings and watch you in action and see what happens. It's totally up to the body itself and what its rules and procedures are for managing itself as to whether you take any kind of public comment in a public meeting situation. That's at the discretion of the body. So there's no stipulation like you guys typically have initial and also final comments in the planning commission meetings. That's totally at your discretion of whether you maintain doing that and how you handle that. In a public hearing, and we're going to have two of those tonight, those are separate little bodies that happen within the context of a regular meeting. You have to be in a regular meeting, close the regular, or go out of the regular meeting and into a public hearing. and the public hearing is expressly for the purpose of hearing public comment. It's not a dialogue, it's not a Q&A period. It's when the public gets to stand up at the microphone, is in our situation, or take the lead here on Zoom and make a statement regarding the issue at hand. So you do not enter into discussion. It's not a dialogue. It's strictly them making a statement. That's all officially recorded, and the substance of their comments has to appear in my minutes. So it's a pretty formalized and legal thing to happen as the public hearing, but that is separate from a regular meeting, which is by definition a public meeting. Does that distinction make sense to you between a meeting, a public meeting, and a public hearing? Okay, and the notification, a public meeting, regular meeting, is required to have a 24-hour notification. That's when I post stuff on the website, I send stuff up that you can subscribe to Utah Public Meeting Notice Board and get it in your email. I try to remember to pegboard it, but that's kind of not a state requirement. It's just something I try to remember to do. A written notice on the on the bulletin board in town. A public hearing requires a 10-day notification. So if I know that that's one reason why a lot of applications require some advance, is not only does April have to go through the applications, but we have to be able to post a 10-day in advance of the meeting notification for people that there's going to be a public hearing on their application. So public hearings require 10 days, regular meeting is 24 hours. You can schedule, if there's an emergency situation that comes up, that there's not a possibility of putting out 24-hour notice, you can do that under rigorous circumstances, but those are few and far between. Closed meetings, and the town council frequently goes into closed meeting session because they discuss things like security systems, personnel. What else did they discuss? I didn't really bone up on the 5 or 6 or 7 reasons for closed meetings, because there's essentially no reason for planning commission to ever go into a closed session. And then finally, record keeping. All meetings are recorded and minutes are taken of all meetings. That's a state stipulation, state code requires. The recordings are always posted on our website on the Planning Commission meeting page. I get those up usually sometime during the weekend after we have the meeting. So that's the first thing to go up, is the recording. The minutes after they're approved are supposed to be supposed to be uploaded 3 days after approval. So getting draft minutes out is always a challenge for all of the clerks, but once they're approved, they need to be posted within 3 days. That's pretty much all I have to say about open meetings. Do you have any questions about aspects of that?
Real quick, great job, Peg. I do recall that pending litigation is one of the reasons for a closed meeting.
Thank you, yes. So county commission, town council, they will go into a closed meeting to discuss those kinds of things, but they just don't occur in planning commission, or not in 15 years that I've been aware of. So, okay. So the other little bit of training, and this is like 2 sentences worth, is the ethics. That's another requirement by the state. And basically state law does not require, there's no requirement for anyone to abstain either from a vote or a discussion. There's just no stipulation about abstaining, but what they do requires kind of a hard word, because it's a judgment call. But if you would be expected to at least disclose if there's any discussion that is about to occur on which you either have some kind of a vested interest, a fiduciary interest of some nature, or a conflict of interest directly. So you're expected to disclose, but there's no requirement that you either abstain or not even partake of the conversation. So that's one thing. That's probably the main thing, actually, as far as the ethics. There's a training session online that I believe for small towns, it's not the requirement it is for larger towns, but through the state auditor's office, it's auditor.utah.gov. And there's a training session that all municipal and county and everybody, actually anybody who is a public, elected, appointed, official, or April, even you and me as employees, as staff, we're supposed to take this training so that we're aware of these kinds of things. And the ethics is part of that. You will be asked, I'll send a document around every year. I think you're supposed to sign this conflict of interest statement where you do disclose anything that you know about right offhand. Like, for example, Haley, when she was on the commission, disclosed that she's the owner of Magnolias. And there were a few discussions that came up where Magnolias was involved, and she disclosed her interest in that, but it didn't preclude her from partaking of the discussion or voting. I think she did abstain in one vote, and that was her choice to make, but there's not a requirement, okay? And that's kind of what the ethics situation for us boils down to. Any questions on that?
As Judy Davis said, just do the right thing.
Yes. Yes, you'll know it when you see it, right? That kind of.
Hey,
okay.
Peg,
yeah.
That's training.auditor.utah.gov.
Thank you. Thank you. Training.auditor.utah.gov. Thank you. Have you done that already, Judy?
Yes.
It's kind of short and sweet. I actually failed. You have to get 100% to pass each little segment. And I missed a couple because I was getting a little cocky and they failed me. So I had to go back and take it again. But each of these segments is like, what, 10 minutes long, if that. So it's very fundamental in information, but probably useful to go through it. Oh, Elizabeth says she recommends it. Just so you're knowledgeable about what is kind of expected of public officials. Okay, I'm done.
Thank you, Peg, for that clarification. That was sweet. So next on the agenda, we have one more sort of item of start of the new year business, and we'll move on to the public hearings and so on. But and I'm going to delegate this over to you, John, because you've prepared for it. So we want to discuss PC process and procedures. So what we're doing here is we're just trying to line out our year, create some efficiency and some basic rules of how we operate, so we're all on the same page and we can work smoothly. Okay, John, it's all you.
Okay, real quick. April or Peg, do you have that sheet that I emailed you about 5 o'clock that you could put up on screen share? Not, I'll just start reading from it.
I've
got this planning commission procedures, one page PDF.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that at 5 o'clock. I was doing other stuff. Let me bring it up, okay? You start talking and I'll bring it
all
up.
All right. Well, so first I think that the planning commission and the town council both do an excellent job of running meetings, but sometimes one of the pieces of advice I got on the air quality board is it's always good to be a little bit more formal. That way, if things get rough or tempers rise, you've got some rules you can refer to figure out how to deal with the situation. I'm going to suggest that we more closely follow the Roberts Rules of Order and actually adopt them officially as our parliamentary authority. The Roberts Rules, I have a abbreviated short copy here, which I think we can get copies of for everyone. It's a real quick read, 100 some pages in big print that answers most people's questions. There are in Robert's rules some formal, there are some less formal rules that apply to small bodies, and they would apply to us and are pretty close to how we are actually running the meetings. The one thing I've noticed in press meetings is sometimes there's been a little rush to vote after a motion is made, And normal procedure is that after a motion is made, if it's a normal motion, it's up for discussion, and then it can be amended. And that gets your exact wording down nice and clear for the secretary of exactly what you're voting on. There are some, in Robert's rules, and it's very clear, there are some exceptions where motions aren't debatable, but those are usually procedural things or a point of order where someone's objecting to what's going on in the meeting. And it's just good to have that parliamentary authority. And the practice using it will carry help all of us in the future, if we're on other boards or whatever.
So, John, to be clear, a motion is made, right. It's seconded, and then it's open to discussion. And then, depending on the discussion, we re-amend or we vote.
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
And for example, there is a procedure, if the debate's dragging on, somebody can make a motion to call the question, which is a non-debatable motion. You have to vote on it, whether you're going to cut off debate. The threshold is 2/3 vote. So, you've got some clear ways to deal with situations if somebody, for example, is just hogging a meeting. So under the ordinance, the Planning Commission may adopt bylaws, policies, and procedures for the conduct and of the duties and meetings of the commissions, and for consideration of applications and for other purposes deemed necessary, if such bylaws and policies and procedures are approved by the council before taking effect. So the first motion I'm making is that I move that we adopt scroll back up to motion one, Peg. Okay, so the first motion I make is that the Planning Commission adopt Robert's Rules of Order, newly revised, as the parliamentary authority for our meetings, as modified by all adopted and approved standing rules. So that would be a motion. Anyone would like to second that?
So I'll second that motion, and then now let's open it up for discussion. Does everyone, any comments, questions for John, clarifications from the Planning Commission? John, this is basically the standardized form of how small bodies are governed, basically, in the procedures they follow. I obviously haven't read the 100 pages, so.
Yeah, the 100 pages is the summary of about 600 pages that cover almost every kind of body. But we would be pretty much using the procedure. There are a set of specific rules for small boards, a dozen or fewer members. We fall under that, so they're much less formal than you would have if you were doing an assembly with 600 voting delegates or something.
And do you believe that we've adhered pretty close to them in the last bunch of years?
I think so. I think we've done a pretty good job. So it's just making it a little more official that if we've got a question that comes up, we've got something to refer to about how to do it.
Okay. And the motions, the how we do the motions and the discussion, the voting is the one that you've seen is the most blatant that we need to adopt.
Not blatant, but I think that's one, I've seen a little confusion about the difference between making a motion and calling the question. But in most cases, one thing that does help is doing exactly what I've done here. And that is, if somebody's got especially a long, complicated motion, to get it typed up in advance, then the secretary isn't trying to scribble down notes. And if somebody wants to amend it, let's go in the third sentence and change shall to should or something like that. We know what we're talking about as we're polishing up the words and getting something ready for a vote.
Great. Well, thank you for bringing this to the table. Does anyone have any comments on that, or should we go into a vote?
And a case like this, Robert's Rules is clear. If you've heard no objection, you as chair can call for a vote.
Okay, then I will call for a vote. Speaking for myself, Matt Cochran, I'm in favor. Aye.
John, Tina Carlson. Aye. Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina okay. Carlson, aye.
Great.
Thank you, John.
Okay, so then the second motion, it's a little non-standard to have an alternate member, but I think it's a very useful role. So I move that the Planning Commission adopt a standing rule allowing the alternate member to fully participate in all discussions and voice votes. The alternate member will continue to vote in roll call votes only when at least one regular member is absent. So Shelley, that's really inviting you to take full part in all the discussion, speak up just like everyone else.
John? John, this is Peg. I believe our ordinance, I don't believe our ordinance allows any vote by the alternate unless they're actually seated due to a vacancy on the Planning Commission that evening. They can participate in discussions, but I think all votes are disallowed unless they're functioning as a member.
Well, since we don't do many voice votes, we could certainly just strike out those add voice votes.
Yeah.
And what's the difference between a voice vote and the other vote? I mean, can't we just leave it the way that it is if you're going to disclude voice votes?
Okay, a good example, and this is again why Robert's rules are so helpful. An example of a voice vote is if the chair says, "Are there any objections to going for to stopping the debate and going to a vote?" Nobody speaks up. That's the voice vote. But if it's a conflict,
it seems to complicate matters a little bit. Do you think, are you okay if we amend that and take the voice votes part out?
Certainly, we could. Yeah, let's do that. Let's strike out those three words, add voice votes.
Does that change anything though, John? I think our ordinances already allow the alternate to participate in discussions. What does this add?
Well, it's making it very clear that, well, I think that's what was not really clear in the ordinance is can the alternate member participate in a meeting? And I think it's really important that the alternate participates because, for example, we might discuss something tonight, but it doesn't come up to a vote till February. So it becomes, you know, it keeps the alternate fully involved.
I see. Yeah. Okay. I think it's just being unfamiliar with the idea of what a voice vote is. So, you know, on second thought, I'm fine with it in there. And as I suppose as chair, it's just understanding the discretion between what a voice vote and a roll call vote is. So
yeah,
I'm good. I'm actually good with it.
I guess it doesn't matter to me very much either way, but I read the ordinance on the alternate earlier. Just because we have a new one and it was clear from the town council meeting that Shelley was wanting to be more active than maybe the previous ones. And it does pretty clearly say that they shall sit in on the meetings and have a voice. I don't know. I guess I just don't really see why we're adding this. It seems clear to me from the ordinances already, but I don't really have a problem with it if we want to add this.
Yeah. Well, I guess that this is just part of our setting our procedures as a board. And then these still go to the town. The third motion is that these should go to the town council for approval. So.
Okay. So we're trying to get clear with each other and then it'll go to the town council. I'd like to just call a vote on it actually. And all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
John, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
And Thompson, aye.
Okay, thank you. Okay, number three, John.
And that's a quick one then that we just forward these two motions, the above two motions to the town council for their approval. It should be
so they would approve these for the planning commission.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Which would be like
I'll second the vote.
Seconding the motion there. Any discussion on this? from Planning Commission? All right. I'm going to call it to a vote. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
John, aye.
Tina Carlson.
Go ahead, Dina.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Thompson, aye.
Great. Maybe we should add a motion to name our roll call off in alphabetical order. I'm kidding. Okay. John, do you have anything else beyond that?
Not till we get to subdivision roads.
Okay. So thank you for that. So I guess we're done with that, Peg. Thank you. And I do want to add a couple things into or a discussion around process and procedures. So two things. One is I know both Peg and April, you know, you have a lot of paperwork coming in and trying to get stuff set up pre-meeting and so on. It would be, as best we can, it'd be really helpful to be able to have all the paperwork to the PC 24 hours in advance, because a lot of times on Thursdays, some of us are working all day and we don't get to the information that needs to be reviewed for the meeting. And so the stuff that come, and this is also to the PC members who are putting information out to each other for the meetings. That's my thought. With 24 hours in advance, we actually have time to review it. So we're not sitting here with unknown information on the table as the meeting starts. Any comments on that discussion, alternatives? Is that possible, Peg, April?
Yeah, I mean, I try to get it in about a week beforehand, so.
Yeah, awesome.
That's actually one thing that we do need to solidify. We've had kind of a standing rule of applications, like subdivision applications or conditional use applications, due 10 days before a meeting, but 10 days doesn't give April time to go through the application, let alone get it to me so I can schedule a public hearing. So April and I were talking about changing that to 14 days in advance of the meeting to have an application in. April, have you thought more about that one?
Yeah, definitely at least 14 days. And the people I've talked to, I mentioned that I need it before a certain deadline for the next, if they want it to be on the next meeting. So.
And how do we go about changing that, Peg? Is that a procedural thing that the PC votes on, or is it just a policy that you guys make?
I think it can just be considered an administrative policy. I need to make sure I post it on the website and that it's known to everybody in some manner. So, but it's, as far as our operational administrative procedures, it's not something that the town council has to vote on or become an ordinance. It's our own thing to set up. So,
okay. I would request that you guys give yourself that extra time, because then that allows us as the PC to get the paperwork in plenty of advance time as well to review.
Okay. And along those same lines, it's sort of between the Planning Commission and the zoning administrator, how you handle all that. Like if she wants to send it to me to distribute to you, or send it to you directly, if you want it in one huge packet, or you're okay with getting stuff in bits and pieces as it comes in, that's another matter that needs to be determined. I don't know that you need to determine that tonight, but we need to work out that process for sure.
Yeah. And another thing is also a lot of these applications are saying the requirement of like 5 copies, large scale. It's up to you guys to decide if you're okay with online documentation. And as long as I have one hard copy of the requirement for some CUP applications.
I would strongly support saying instead of taking out these giving us 12 copies of paper documents in this day and age. I think if as long as you've got one signed, wet signed original, it can be all scanned and sent electronically.
I agree.
And it's easier to archive that way too for the secretary.
Yeah, and of course, I'm running, the digital is fine, but it's just important that we all have plenty of time to review the information. Otherwise, our meetings are slowed down and delayed in many ways. So it'd be nice just to sharpen that up and get it going.
Okay. April, how about if you and I just draft out some of these little addendum items and pass them back to the group? This can probably all be handled offline. I don't think you need to
vote on it or anything. We can do that. But we'll do that for the next meeting.
Yeah, that's good. Okay.
Can I have a question about it?
Yeah.
Yes.
On these applications, are they time stamped somehow? When we receive them?
They are documented when they're received.
Thank you.
And okay, so let's leave it at that and go on to next item on the agenda. Thank you. Is there anything else? Did I miss anything on that? Anything left? John, you're done.
I think you've covered it pretty well. I think Peg's right. A lot of the details are really with the staff, how they want to run it. And we're basically backing them up and saying we want 14 days. I would agree somewhere 3 to 5 days before the meeting is really needed to make sure everyone's prepared. 24 hours actually is a little short. So I think as time goes on, we should try to get things, if they've got 14 days, they can get it to us 5 days before the meeting. Then we've got, time to be prepared.
Okay. Let's take the rest of this discussion offline and just come up with what we need, then work with April and Peg on it. Sound good?
Yep.
Matt, may I make a comment?
Please.
I'm also trying to update a lot of these applications. So if the planning board would like to review things and if they have any comments, we can talk about that further.
Okay, great. Did you mean offline or right now?
Offline.
Okay.
Doesn't need to be done now.
Great. Thank you, April. So, okay, we're going to move, we're moving towards the public hearing on the residential short-term rentals. Before we go there, April, can you give us sort of just update us on the status of the paperwork for that and sort of for the general public and for the planning commission on where we're at?
I think you've received all the information. It's just their application for a short-term rental. I am waiting on, I believe, the tax thing. I'm trying to figure out. But that, it states you guys can still approve everything, and then after, I just have to wait to sign off on it.
So on the condition that piece of information comes through?
Yes, but it does not stop you from voting or approving this application.
Okay, and the application is complete, everything on it?
Yes.
Okay.
And everything complies with the ordinance other than having one document missing?
That's correct.
Good job, thank you.
Okay, so before we, as the Planning Commission, go into discussion on this, we're going to open up the public hearing. And so Peg, help me out on this. I think that requires that I officially close the public meeting. And then do I need to make a motion to open the public hearing?
I believe all you need to do is just make a motion to go into public hearing and then a second and a vote. And then okay. The same thing when you close the public hearing and go back to regular meeting.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to make a motion to open the public hearing on the RS, the residential short-term rental for, Stedman, and I'm sorry, the second last name, here it is, in Peterson. This is in North Boulder Forest, 4650 North Moki Street. So second, I'll need a second on that.
Second.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Pauline Thompson, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John Varanth, aye.
Okay, so the public hearing is now open, and this is where we would like to hear the public's comments on this application for conditional use permit for residential short-term rental in North Boulder. You can raise your hand digitally or unmute yourself. Is April or Peg? I don't know who's in charge of sort of looking for that, but. Anyone?
I don't see anything.
Okay, counting down, 3, 2, 1, last chance. Okay, thank you. And I'll make a motion to close the public hearing.
John, second.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, Carlson, aye.
Pauline Thompson, aye.
John Varanth, aye.
Okay, great. So for the Planning Commission, this is, I suppose, according to Robert Roost's, John, we make a motion, second it, then discuss?
Yeah, so someone needs to make a motion to approve the CUP or to deny it.
Okay. So I'll make a motion to approve the conditional use permit for Stedman Peterson.
I second it.
Okay, so now it's time for discussion. Does anyone have, this is where we make comments. If you've reviewed it, is everything you see good? Is there anything that's been missed? Are there any extra conditions you want to put on this use permit? Let's go just around the horn I'd like to hear from all the Planning Commission members. If you have nothing to say, you can say that.
I have nothing to say, no comment.
Okay.
Tina Carlson has no comment.
Okay, Elena?
I guess the only thing I was thinking that I didn't see was proof of it being primary residency, but I suppose if April says everything was there, then everything was there. So I'm good, I guess.
Okay. They do spend about 50% of their time here, and they are registered to vote in Boulder.
Cool.
And a mailbox here. And so I have a question there for Michael, Brittany. Is, you know, you say, I think in the application, it mentioned that your son also lived there. And so is there a property manager or one of you on hand when the residential short term is being rented so that someone can respond according to ordinance within, I think physically within 3 hours of if an emergency comes up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And as for the, I don't know if this is relevant, but the other piece of information that April needs, I have it and I will send that tomorrow or after the meeting, just as an FYI.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, John, any comments?
No, I really appreciate, you know, having good staff makes the commission's board much easier. And I think April's done a great job on going through this. I was starting to go through it and check it against the ordinance. And I said, wait a minute, that's April's job. So I really appreciate that it's been done. And that helps our meeting go much smoother. So thank you.
Okay. And let's see, Shelley, do you have any comments? I'll take that as a no. Yeah, Michael, Brittany, thanks for doing all the work on the RSTR. I know it's a lot, and you know, and just appreciate putting it all together. So on that note, I'm gonna call for a vote. And so Matt Cochran, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
John Varanth, aye.
Is that everyone?
Yep.
Okay, congratulations, you guys. That is on the condition that you get when you get that paperwork in, and then you're ready to go. So,
thank you so much.
Can I add one statement here?
Please.
One thing with short-term rentals is they are reviewed on a yearly basis. So basically that means by next January, you would just resubmit your intent to either stop the use or continue with the same usage. And assuming there haven't been any problems or complaints that would cause any change to that, then it's pretty much just a stamp action that you'll get to continue your usage. But you do have to do it on a yearly basis here.
Right, and that will be an administrative review, like you said, unless there are complaints from neighbors or something like that, right? Peg?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Great.
So after this meeting, if I have a question about it, can I ask, since this thing's already passed and everything?
Why don't we save those questions perhaps for offline, Shelley, to get
okay.
If you need clarity
that's
on
why
it.
I'm asking.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So the next item on the agenda is Ray Gardner's RV park. And before we go into public hearing there, again, April, I want to turn it over to you and sort of, you know, have you take us through the basics. And I guess my question beyond all the basic RV standards is also when it comes to the commercial development standards, which the Planning Commission is going to go through the relative questions on that. If, you know, if all the absolute or the required things are have met, and been checked off?
Yes, they have. There is just one minor thing, the sort of the topographical map. They're at 4 feet instead of 2 feet. But I think you can see everyone's aware of the location and hopefully everyone knows the site.
Right. So there are no cliffs hiding between those contour lines, in other words.
And the slope. So I feel that's probably going to be adequate. And then it's up to you guys to review the commercial development standards and RV. But okay. From my knowledge, everything's checked off.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I have a kind of a minor point of order here that since what we actually approve is literally the conditional use permit application. We have had documents given to us now over a period of months. And I don't think it's an insurmountable barrier to going forward right now. But compared to, for example, what Ray Nelson did on his subdivision, where everything was there in one package at one time in the attachments to one meeting, That is a much more complete application. So it's going to be, we'll have to be sure we're talking that if documents have been amended from what was submitted in an earlier meeting, we understand which one we're approving as the CUP application. So
the ones that you should be are the ones that Peg posted online. That's the complete application that he addresses everything and to not deal with the previous email.
Okay. I did not see something that looked like, I think that was the one, it was missing the cover page is all you're saying it was missing. But that's why I say I didn't find online what looked to me like a complete application. So I have the documents, the stormwater plan, the landscape plan and all that. And we've got the two topo maps. So are we saying that minus the cover sheet that those two documents, those two maps and the five-page document are the complete application?
Yeah, and I actually think it might be four maps that he did. He has a different one. Peg, maybe you have one that has a closer view of what the actual RV looks like.
Yeah, I only found two maps online, and that's what I'm kind of saying, that it's a little too informal and for my feeling of us making a legal approval. But let's see if we can sort it out as we go along. I don't want to be a barrier.
Yeah, there are actually four maps online, John. And if you go to the under the boulder.gov and then into the Planning Commission. And I think April, you posted those maybe yesterday or Peg a couple of days ago.
John, everything he's addressed in his application, the stormwater landscape construction, it checks off everything, all the requirements.
Okay.
The format may be different. And if you guys want a certain format done, then that needs to be discussed later on. But everything, the way he's laid it out, it checks off all the requirements.
Okay.
Okay, so there's, let's see, actually the way I wanna play this tonight, there's one before we, so there's the commercial development standards and, you know, the checklist, either the yes or no's, they're all checked off, you know, according to yes, according to April, but there is some discretion on the PC's prerogative here where we, basically, we created the commercial development standards as a score sheet or a checklist to go through to, you know, assess if it was something that passed. So we have a bunch of things to go through where we give, I'm trying to say this for the public, I'm trying to be clear, but and Peg, maybe you can bring the commercial standards review worksheet up. And the Planning Commission needs to go through this. And I think we should go through it before the public hearing. So any comments that come up can address those, that planning process. But we need to go through this.
And Matt, you might want to just go through the RV ordinance also at the same time. That's also a requirement.
Is that assume that was what you have done as a zoning administrator. And I don't know if the Planning Commission has, because that's basically a checklist. It's a yes or a no, correct?
It's correct, but I mean, I feel like you should probably review that also to be aware of the requirements for it.
Okay, I guess the matter is, should we review it publicly or has the Planning Commission reviewed that with themselves, which we have, and we can go through that for sure. Maybe then we'll start, Peg, if you can bring in the RV ordinances so we can see them.
You'll have to get me a minute here because I don't have that. Let me get on the website and just go directly to our ordinances. So hold on a second. You can keep talking.
Yeah, I'm going there as well.
You know, the I think one thing that April is saying, she's made sure that the application is complete as far as all the elements that are required to be addressed in the application. But it's, as you recall, the checklist, you go through that and you determine things that are absolutes and you weight, assign weights to the things that are variables. And she can't do that. That's for you guys.
No, so. Yeah, but she just said the RV ordinance. I was talking about commercial standard development standards. Are we talking about something different?
Well, yeah. That's where I feel like it's kind of, it's combined. I mean, you want to make sure you don't have any issues with the RV ordinance and make sure everything. I'm just the checkpoint person. You guys are happy to approve everything. So in case you had questions about like if he didn't need it or if you didn't like how it was described through the RV ordinance, it may be checked off, but you guys might want to just review that.
Okay, I'm just pulling it up here.
Yeah, I think maybe could you, since you have read it through, I am more accustomed to relying on staff to have gone through the line by line checking. That doesn't relieve us of our obligation to be aware of things. So would you like to, April, lead us through a discussion of any issues or either favorable or unfavorable that we need to be specifically aware of?
There hasn't been anything glaring to my knowledge that would stop it from being approved. There was it Lee Ellis talked about maybe different types of trees planted. Just make sure the dark sky, I'm trying to think of what else. I'm not sure as far as fire protection, if you are going to require fire hydrants. That's part of the campground RV thing. So that could be discussed.
Okay, well, Peg, let's start going through with the, let's start with the commercial standard development review worksheet, and we'll go through line by line on that. And that'll refer back also to the recreational, the RV campground ordinance in there. I think that's probably the most accurate way to play it at this point.
Okay. I just brought up the RV ordinance that was passed at the end of last year by the town council. So let me go to the checklist. Hold on.
Thank you.
I'm having trouble juggling these documents. I apologize.
Okay, so I'll talk about it while you bring it up. So the commercial standards, development standards review worksheet is something that was put in place in the last few years with lots of work with the PC. It is a checklist that allows the PC to work through all the different parts of the RV or of a commercial ordinance to see if it passes muster or not without a lot of speculation. So it's meant as a tool for us to use. It seems here that we have to, this is what we're going to do in this meeting right now, is work through it in a way that everyone can see, and then we'll open the public hearing after that.
Okay. I have the document up on my screen. I just need to get it to where you can look at it. Is that showing up now?
Yes, thank you. Okay, so PC, starting on line one, and Peg, maybe you can a little bit of arrow this. You see there's an absolute and a relative thing. The absolute is either it's a yes or a no, and then the relative we can weigh in on that. So Ray, I'll probably be asking you some questions as we go through this just to keep us on task here. So first off, the commercial development, which is the RV campground, it can only be on Highway 12. Yes. Okay. That's absolute. So I wonder if someone would in the PC would volunteer to keep score on this, if you know what I mean. Colleen, you're most familiar with this. Would you mind doing that?
Yeah, I have a copy here.
Thank you.
I can make that checklist off. So the number one is an absolute, right?
Correct. Number two, the two it talks about is the commercial in an overlay. An overlay means like sensitive land, things like mesa tops, steep hills. No. So basically, the number two settings, let's see, are, I mean, that it doesn't apply. 2B watercourse buffer. Ray, what is the watercourse buffer that's on your map there? Is it 25 foot?
I have to push a button.
Yeah, push the button so it's green.
Yes, Matt, that was the intent with that. The map may not show it well, but that is the intent.
Okay. And there are no moderate slopes of greater than 15% within your setup there?
That's correct.
Okay. So they get a full five on that?
So, sorry, Peg, go back down. I got it here. Yeah, so moderate slopes. The scoring system there is, I'm trying to understand Lee's stuff. I think it's a plus two or a minus two. But basically, if there are no modest slopes, it just stays at a neutral zero.
Okay.
Okay, crossings have to be as close to perpendicular as possible to arrange that. Is that, I mean, I can't imagine having a parallel crossing on a river.
In Ray's, having a culvert for the exit, the one-way.
Correct. Okay, so here the PC needs to weigh in. And so, Ray, for views, and you've retained natural features and views in the area, it seems like to me. Is that correct?
Yes. There's only one structure for this initial part of it. And yes, that's been placed. The consideration there is placed within, I believe it's 400 feet of fire protection. And so that is within that limit. So that's okay. Where we felt it had to go.
Okay, but you've retained as much of the natural features and the views as possible?
Yes, so there won't be, in terms of disturbing natural features, there will be very little of that.
Okay. So I look to the PC here. That sounds like a plus one or a plus two vote. Does anyone want to weigh in on that? I would suggest a plus one vote.
I agree with that.
I'm okay.
Works for me.
All right. Okay. And as far as I can tell from the map, retaining vegetation, and vegetation means more like trees, pinions, and junipers. There's really nothing you're taking out so much. What's the status of that, Ray?
Correct, Matt. This plan currently does not, as you can see, there's not very much vegetation as it's historically been a cow pasture, but this plan does not take out any existing trees. Obviously, on the east side of Deer Creek, it does have to remove some sagebrush, but that's the extent of it.
Okay. So this is a relative vote. So I propose to the PC that that's a plus one there. Agreements, disagreements?
I'm okay with the one.
Everyone else, please weigh in.
I'm a little confused with the numbering system, so I feel a little inept, but sounds good to me.
Okay, so basically, if the client, if Ray is retaining vegetation, that's a positive score. If he's removing a lot of vegetation, that would be a negative score. If it's somewhere in the middle, that would be a neutral score. And so since vegetation here means primarily larger intact trees and stuff like that. So that's why I would score it positive.
Matt, it looks to me like they're not all a range of negative two to positive two. This one seems to only be a range of zero to negative two.
So I'm
know that we can be positive here.
Okay, so you're right. Thank you for that detail. So I guess it would be a zero then.
And if
zero is good on this ray, by the way. Okay, so and I'm just going to apologize publicly. This is the first time the PC has ever worked through this publicly, so just bear with us. We will get faster at it. So the next things are absolutes here, protecting vegetation. That's what Ray is doing. There's not number three. We've seen the stormwater plan, which Ray, I don't know if anyone has questions about that, but it was pretty detailed with the culverts and so on. Do you have any comments around that, Ray?
No, not really, other than the application is fairly vague in that it just says stormwater plan. So to me, that's open to a lot of interpretation of how much detail and what information to include in that. So that might be something that at some point the Planning Commission looks at.
But it's state law, so you've gone, so it doesn't adhere to the state law, basically.
Mentioned the year under your threshold.
Okay, so yeah, looking at state law, it says if your project is under an acre or that you disturb under an acre, then that doesn't apply to your project.
Okay, but you guys are 5 acres, right?
He's saying disturbing. He's not disturbing more than an acre, so it falls under that. As far as a more detailed stormwater plan, that would require an engineer to do and talk about runoff and the loads, water loads and stuff like that.
So where are we on that?
He meets the requirements. He's not disturbing more than an acre.
Okay, so the stormwater is in compliance.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Utilities. April, can you weigh in on the utilities for us?
I believe it's in his plan. You know, he's talked to the appropriate departments to get utilities into his service.
Right.
Was it possible to do it underground?
We'll get to that later on in here.
Okay. Doing it underground. It states in his construction plan, it does say underground.
Yeah, we'll be there, yeah, in a sec. So you've cleared, it has access to Highway 12, correct? Access to other roads, I'm not sure exactly what that means.
Just if it fronts any other actual public roads, which I don't think it does.
Okay. So yes. Oh, you're looking up there.
Next thing is the utilities underground thing.
Yeah. So next is the relative. Ray, are the utilities that you're installing going to be underground or overhead?
It will be underground.
Okay. So our weighted score on that is from 0 to +2. They're all underground. So I'd suggest a +2. Is that good with the planning commission?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dimensional standards. We need table 2. And this is in relationship to the, is this the sizing of the lot we're talking about here? That was a question for anybody.
It actually says planning commission may require deeper setbacks. It has to do with setbacks.
But what is the dimensional standard is for the size of the lot? Or are we talking buildings here? That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I think it's the size of the lot. I can try to find it again, but when I looked at it originally, it's something it has it's like to do with like
1/3 by 2/3 or something like that.
Similar to that, or like buildings per acre and setbacks from the street and stuff. It's okay, I found it again. Peg, are you able to find this table? It's I
clicked on the link to the table of development standards, and this is
what I'm looking at. Yeah.
So it's primarily it's density of dwellings and then it's setbacks and height, maximum building height and those things. Yes.
Okay, so Ray, what are your setbacks? What's the height of the structure and so on?
So the total height, I'm not completely clear on as the architect putting that together. My estimation would be 16 feet would be the peak of the roof.
Okay, and I think it has to be under 30, I think is what the table shows.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 2.5 stories, I believe. And so for commercial, it's saying minimum front yard is 30 feet, and then maximum size of the building is 1,000 square feet.
Just to clarify, is it, it's GMU that it's in?
No, it's going to be considered commercial.
Oh, right. Okay.
No, he's in a GMU zone. It's not been rezoned.
Okay.
These are commercial standards to apply to GMU areas.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks,
Okay. Guys. So as maximum parking basically, an RV park is a parking unit, correct?
Yes, and he has also the tent parking he has updated, and then also the additional parking for the pavilion.
For the pavilion, and okay.
There's 2 parking spots required.
How many? So basically we're in, in 6B, that there's 15 to 50, is that correct? There's parking for the dwelling, which is 6C. Sorry, I'm on my screen, so I don't know if,
can you see the map that I just put up?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if that's helpful or not. Do you want me to go back to the checklist?
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, it you know, I know there, how many RV spots do you have? 20 in there, Ray, or 30?
So Matt, there's this sketch, what we're looking at on the screen, it shows six RV spots on the west side of the stream and an additional 14 on the east side of the stream near the highway.
Okay.
For a total of 20.
Okay. So the next, go ahead.
Yeah, I think going through this, this is incredibly confusing. I appreciate everyone's patience that's going through this because we have the number of campsites, then we require two common, not specific sites for every additional space. We've got a lot of things that do it, but I think we're clearly between the 15 and the 50, which seems to be the intent of, you know, not having a Walmart-sized parking lot. But yeah, it's very confusing for a campground exactly how many parking spaces he's supposed to have, but it does seem to have met the intent.
Right.
Yeah, and that's where the RV ordinance comes in. It describes what he needs to do, the length of the RV pull-in and everything like that. And that's why I was saying review the RV ordinance, because these kind of go back and forth with the commercial development. And
so how do you suggest we proceed, April?
He meets the requirements under the RV ordinance. So, I mean, as you can see, the parking, if you're okay with that, then, I mean, he meets that. But it's kind of where this gets complicated because it's the RV ordinance and the commercial use. So you kind of have to go back and forth on things to make sure everything's in.
Okay. I think it's a bit of a change.
So let's move on to 6D, land use intensity. What that entails is how intensive is the RV park land use compared to neighboring properties? As far as I understand, Ray doesn't have any neighbors, so it's sort of a moot issue. So I would suggest that that is a zero.
Okay.
Is that property clear for the PC?
Yep.
Okay. Moving on to 7A, outdoor spaces setback. This is table 2 again. The outdoor space is the pavilion, I suppose. And table 2 shows what is the setback there.
It's 30 feet.
And that's on all sides, setback from a road?
Actually, this table's not very clear. It says rear yard or side yard, one's 30 feet and one's 10 feet. So that's.
I imagine that would be from property lines and or roads?
A property line.
Property lines, period.
Okay.
And then for the outdoor space, Ray, have you provided buffering or screening? And I suppose that's in the way of vegetation or something for that pavilion?
Yes, Matt. I intended to put a row of trees for buffering kind of on the west side of the pavilion and also on the north side between the driveway and the pavilion. And my site plan also indicates a row of trees for buffering between the highway and the project.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, no, I see that on the map. So I would suggest to the Planning Commission that, that we score that with a plus one.
Got it.
Yeah.
And what is, Ray, sorry if you said this already, what is the distance between the highway and the, I don't know, first RV spot or?
So are we talking on the, on the,
on the west side?
On the west side?
Yeah. Or let's see.
Just looking at the scale, driving distance, you're about probably 300 feet, straight line, closer to 200 feet.
Okay.
Okay, so that moves us on to outdoor sales setback, which there are no outdoor sales there. So the eights are non-applicable. Am I making sense?
Yeah.
I'm not on the major screen here. So, oh, there you are, Pig. Yeah.
So we're on nine, parking and traffic.
Thank you. You seem to have all the parking and traffic flow set in. It's a one way around, correct?
Yes.
Okay, the next one is mitigation.
Do we have a definition of what mitigation is in the above table?
Whoops. I may have gone past it here. I'm not on it yet. Not...
Hey, Peg. Do you have Lee Nellis's number? He said he'd be on call. He might be able to work us through this in a much less clunky way. I just don't have his number on hand, but if we call him up, we can ask him to join here.
Okay. I'm not sure. Let me, I have an email.
I guess I do.
Do you, April? Is that April? Yeah.
It's Elena.
Elena.
Oh, Elena. Yeah. Will you shoot him a call and ask him to jump on the call?
Yeah, ask them to just get on Zoom.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Okay. My phone only works on speakerphone, so you'll all get to hear me.
Okay.
Your call has been forwarded.
I'll text him and see if I get anything.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we're going to bypass mitigation for now. We can go back to that. Off-street parking. So as I remember on table three, well, it talks about for every 10 RV spaces, there has to be, do you remember this, April, one or two parking spaces?
Yeah, so he, I think it's the 45-foot depth and then for the RV spots, and then for tent sites, I believe it's two, and that coincides with the pavilion.
Okay.
And there's a parking spot for each tent site also.
Right, and then the RV parking is matches up with the depths and width of what it calls for.
That's correct.
Come on a
Real quick, while she's waiting, Matt, I just checked the search the ordinance two different ways. There's no definition of mitigation in the ordinances.
Okay.
Existing.
I can't quite imagine what it is or if it would really affect this. So
he said to give him a minute and then he'll be on.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's there are a couple of things we can do on the relatives here. So let's start at 10F, buffering and screening, internal landscaping. Both those, Ray, from your plan shows that. Can you tell us sort of the tree setup you've used and how you've implemented that?
Sure. So I think it's detailed in my construction plan, but beginning at the cattle guard, moving south along the fence line, parallel with the highway, I would plant trees at 20-foot intervals to provide a buffer and screening. There's probably still some room for discussion as to what kinds of trees, and I'm open to suggestions, but that would extend to the south. I believe I put in there 900 feet at 20-foot intervals. I think that should... I think that would be adequate screening for this project.
Okay, thank you. So I would, depending on the tree type, I'd give that a positive score of at least plus one.
I got it.
Okay. Internal landscaping, what do you have done for that? I mean, I guess that's some of it, but...
So internally, I did mention the row of trees on the west side as well, and a little bit on the north. Otherwise, my intention was to leave the native grass to do very little in terms of landscaping, other than what I have to disturb to provide the parking pads and the drive-through.
Okay. Great.
Will you just join the meeting?
Yeah.
Can you do a two on that?
Sorry, missed that.
Lee is on.
Oh, good.
Yay. Can we
Thank
do
you,
a
two on landscaping? Sorry to call you on last minute.
That's okay.
We're very clunkily going through the commercial standard review worksheet and a little bit confused on some of the definitions. And we are hoping you could sort of streamline us through it.
Right. So where do you want to start?
I suppose we should just start at the beginning and just make sure that we've been scoring through. We're around, I think we're at building access right now. So we've been hitting the relatives are clear, but the absolutes aren't as clear. So maybe we can run through those.
Sure. Let's see if we can get, you guys have the sheet up, yeah?
Yeah.
The one we got held up on was 9B mitigation.
Oh, I thought we did a good job. I think we'd like to, I'd like to move back down to 9. I think we've done great, Matt, and we just need help on 9.
Let's okay.
Are you able to see Are you able to see the checklist? I can't tell what you're looking at.
I can see the checklist. It's not. If you want to go to 9, you're not there yet.
Right. Okay. I was going.
Mitigation. Yes. 9B.
So what is mitigation? Yep.
Mitigation is whatever you might ask a developer to do to deal with offsite impacts. In a big city, the example would be they might have to install a traffic signal or build an additional turn lane or something like that. And so mitigation is to the extent that you see a need in the community's infrastructure.
Okay, so it has to do with parking and traffic, basically, as it's...
it basically has to do with traffic and roads. Not as much with parking, usually, but it's about, you know, if you had a project that was going to use an intersection that you thought was dangerous, you could ask them to make some change in that intersection, right?
Right.
As a condition of approval. I don't know that there's anything about what you're looking at right now that, that raises any of those issues, but that's the deal, is that, you know, the developer is going to install what the code calls for on his or her own parcel, but
right.
There could be an impact on the community's, generally speaking, on the community's traffic issues. Okay. Elsewhere.
I think that's probably a null point here. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is just going to be, you know, if it's an absolute, because it would be an absolute standard if you did it. So I think you're going to just check off the not relevant and go on.
Okay. Then off-street parking, is that relevant for an RV campground?
Well, obviously the RV spaces are provided in accord with what the RV standards say. Otherwise, there's no standard in the parking table that would apply to this use. And so I think that you're probably going to gonna be okay on all of 10 here.
Okay.
And 10D, where you're talking about buffering the parking, well, there's 10DE, F. Those things are all taken care of by the RV park standards themselves. And so the landscaping, the width of the buffer and the landscaping that is proposed for RV parks is going to be different and more stringent than these requirements. Or at least generally more stringent. So
yeah, and Ray's actually, we've actually already weighed in on those with the internal landscape.
I mean, I saw that there was a proposal for quite a few trees, and
yeah,
you know, it looked to me like that must be pretty well taken care of.
Yeah, building access, Ray, is your pavilion parallel or perpendicular to Highway 12, or is it square?
Matt, it's not parallel, but it's somewhere in between. It's not quite parallel. I adjusted the building a couple of times, just where it seemed like it fit better with the landscape. And it does not run parallel with the highway.
Okay, thank you. So let's put that at a, I suppose, a zero. Does that sound about right? Ray, or do you, I mean, sorry, Lee, or how would you?
Yeah, I mean, this building is going to be set back quite some distance from the road, as I understand it.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, the goal is to not have some sort of a building line of commercial where you're building retail stores, things like that, that people would want to have nearer to the street. In this case, where it's going to be far back, I'm not sure that there's a great deal of concern here, and I'd probably just give it a zero and run on.
Okay. And so the 12s, these are part of the actual RV ordinance, is that correct?
Well, no, those are all applicable to every commercial project, including this one. And, you know, there's not going to be, there's a miss... Utah permit to discharge. Yeah. Not going to be relevant here. Okay. You can certainly just show that it's not relevant. Runoff is a question that you have to ask. Is the way that this is graded going to direct drainage onto someone else's property? That's why this is here, is to protect adjacent property owners from having to soak up runoff that comes off a project.
So that's a non-issue on this project.
So you have to have a factual determination there, okay? Air quality permit certainly does not apply. Hazardous materials. Outdoor lighting, you know, whatever fixtures are proposed for the RV park need to have the IDA seal.
And Ray's addressed that.
Yeah, so, you know, and then light trespass is a slightly different take on the idea of outdoor illumination, which is just, again, like that drainage standard. This one is here in case you think there's going to be an impact on an adjoining property owner. Even if the light standards and fixtures and everything comply, is it going to create a problem on an adjoining property? And I do not see that that's a big issue here either.
Well, he has no neighbors.
Yeah, I mean, so it's easier to have no neighbors, right?
Yeah.
Dust and smoke, the same questions. Don't see that you're going to have that. Heat and glare, that would be from an industrial process like welding or something like that. Noise, you know, this is pretty well buffered. And there's a generator standard for, you know, for no generators. You guys might want to, with not just Mr. Gardner's project here, but with any commercial project, you might want to think about, you know, an operating hours standard or condition when you get there so that that addresses noise. Noxious weeds, state law requires that he have either have no noxious weeds on the property or have a plan for managing them. And that's not negotiable. That's part of the state agricultural laws to deal with weeds. And that'd be a factual, I have no idea. That's a factual question. And so that gets you through the 12s. They just aren't very applicable here for the most part.
Okay. So 13 is now we're into solid waste. And I guess
and that's there's a separate solid waste piece in the RV standards. So you're going to want to look at the RV standards. And then if it meets those, say that it complies with this as well.
Okay. And can I just refer over to April on that? Does that check off the solid waste plan or the septic plan for this?
Well, there hasn't actually been a solid waste plan. He does mention trash cans and such, but if you want a more detailed plan as far as how often it's being removed and that kind of stuff, or more detail, then that's up to you guys. He does mention the trash cans and the locations of them.
So is basically that's asking Lee if the solid waste is taken care of and
well, I think that what you'll read when you look at the RV standard part of this is that there needs to be a proposed method of hauling in addition to showing where the dumpsters or whatever container is going to be used will be on the site plan. He needs to, and this can be a condition of getting, you know, the certificate of occupancy. You wouldn't necessarily expect someone to come in with a contract for hauling when they just file an application. So I would set a condition that before occupancy, before the thing is opened, that, you know, there be a contract for hauling submitted so that you know that it's taken care of. That's a fairly standard standard way of doing business.
Okay. Ray, have you addressed that and noted that? Yeah. And then 13B is about the buffering and screening of that area.
Of the solid waste, yeah. And the RV standard is much more specific than this one because it talks about making sure that the wind won't, you know, I can't remember the exact wording, but we went through all that. And so you're going to want to look at the RV standards. And then if it complies with those, it'll comply with this. So that that probably will end up, you know, unless you think he's done either a particularly good or particularly poor job of dealing with it, it'll probably end up as a zero.
Okay. So Ray, can you address the plan for solid waste buffering and screening and how you're dealing with that?
Sure, Matt. I have a couple of options. One is that to me made more sense, at least initially, and that is to collect the solid waste and remove that from the site and project down to the dumpsters. My second option is I have contacted I believe it's Hughes Waste Company in Panguitch, and they would provide what they refer to as a roll-off dumpster that they would place somewhere on site. When that is full, I contact them and they come collect that and bring me an empty one.
Okay. And do you have any idea of where that location is on the map at this point?
If that were to happen, it would be more south a map near the, probably in my mind, where it would make sense would be near the Krills by the highway, which isn't indicated on that map, but it's just to the south along the highway where that map ends.
And that would be, and would be planning on screening that from, I suppose, Highway 12?
Yes, or there is a hill there. I could place it down the hill somewhat where it would be screened from the highway.
Okay. So, Lee, how we would score that then?
Well, I think what you would have to do he's considering two options. My sense is that a big drop-off dumpster is probably not the best option. I think I agree about that. Then you need places that are more accessible to the users of the park, where they will carry their stuff to, and then, you know, the park is responsible for collecting it and ultimately getting it on somebody's truck or getting it to a landfill. But I think there needs to be, I think tonight, if you find yourself otherwise thinking this is something you're going to approve, that I would say right now we don't have enough information. It's probably not a problem. I'd score it as a -1 and then say as a condition of bumping it up from -1, we need to see a more specific plan about how this is going to be managed. And then before occupancy, we need to see an actual contract for who's going to do the hauling offsite. So that's, I mean, the thing about the point scoring is it allows you to write effective conditions. You can say that right now we don't have enough information, give it a -1, but then attach a condition with that that says, hey, we get some more information and that -1 will be bumped up and no longer be an obstacle. So that's what I would do, is simply score that as a -1 right now. And then write a condition. And each time you write a condition with scoring, you're going to need a motion from a member to say, okay, we're going to score this a certain way and we're going to attach a condition to that score. And if the condition is fulfilled, then we have no problem. Okay, if the condition is not fulfilled, then it remains at a minus.
Real quick question, Ray. Do you think that the dumpsters are going to be visible from the highway?
The collection points within the campground RV sites, they will be screened, but they'll be visible until the trees are taller. I guess I'll leave it at that.
Okay, but they're going to be reasonably far from the highway. Like, because they're going to be near the campsites.
Correct. The closest to the highway, so there would be two collection points, one near the highway on the east side of the stream. That distance would be about 150 feet from the highway. The second collection point would be near the main structure, the only structure, the office pavilion area.
Given that, considering that those are further from the road and less visible than any existing dumpster in town, I would consider that as zero, that we don't have a real need for additional buffering and screening of the dumpsters in this case.
I'm good with that, but do we need to put a condition on it for the paperwork like Lee is suggesting?
The ordinance requires under 22B7F, the Planning Commission may require submission of a solid waste service contract as a condition of continuing compliance. So I would say once he's in operation, he simply needs to document that he has some contract for solid waste disposal.
So is that a condition we need to place on the CUP?
I think it's really, you could put it, that should be a condition in the CUP because the ordinance says we can put that as a condition in the CUP.
And that's how the ordinance is written. So you're going to need to have an adopted condition that says, hey, before the certificate of occupancy is open, the town needs to see a contract. It's quite straightforward in this case. Yeah.
Okay, so I'd like to do that now. Is that the right timing?
Sure.
So
you need to do these as you go.
Yeah, to make a motion before the certificate of occupancy that we have a contract for the waste hauling in place.
Yeah, the wording would be solid waste service contract.
Solid waste service contract. Thank you.
And the motion should refer to the section of the code that John just cited.
22B7F.
Yeah.
Do you want a contract, or would it be the put on Ray to dispose of it? Also, he had two options.
As long as he's got something, some business arrangement to get it to take it by landfill.
Okay, so you say no to bringing it into the town dumpsters then?
I think that's exactly the sort of question we're discussing here. You know, with construction projects, we've decided, you know, that people have to have a commercial dumpster, or discussed having a commercial dumpster rather than hauling it, putting the burden on the town. That would be the real question, is are we willing to
it seems like all the other commercial businesses do use the dumpsters at this point. So that's why I'm asking.
I think that's a good question then. Yeah. Because no other business has been required to have a dedicated dumpster, have they?
Not to my knowledge. Come up with a plan, condition for this condition of he has a solid waste plan of how he's going to remove it, or does he actually have to have a contract with an outside source?
I didn't write this checklist or the camping ordinance, so I'm not really sure what the intent was there. Matt and Colleen, you were there. What was your intent?
Well, I don't think we talked about that one at great length. And you know, the standard way of dealing with this is that businesses are required to be formally responsible for their solid waste.
However,
and the fact that that hasn't been the case in the past doesn't change my suggestion that you you start making businesses be responsible for their solid waste. And I guess the other question, a relevant question.
That becomes a real equity thing, that why we single out one business to require and make it meet a requirement that no other business in town is imposed on.
Every requirement has a first day that it happened.
Well, the other thing too is Ray's not in town. So his business isn't in town.
He's in the Boulder town limits.
Yeah,
well, I know. I'm just saying that he's not like in town where the other businesses are. Like, we brought dumpsters into Hills and Hollows, and he's farther out of town than any business so far as Boulder. Am I correct on that? Right, Ray? You're the
Garkane's further out.
Well, yeah, but that's...
Garkane's commercial.
Yep, they are.
So, I mean, okay. I think we have to be equitable. If we're going to impose a requirement like this, it would be much more appropriate to ask the town to pass an ordinance that all businesses must do something. I'm troubled by the no option is good. I agree with you, Lee. Every ordinance has a first day. But it is very unusual to have to single out one business for a different requirement than is imposed on other businesses. I think they would, there is an equity question that we have to be careful about.
There's no lawful equity question raised here at all, because the ordinance is passed. This is the first application to which this is applicable. You know, we're going forward, not backward here.
Yeah.
Also,
I guess that a relevant question that to which maybe none of us know the answer is whether or not there's a town ordinance, a separate ordinance about the use of those town dumpsters.
No.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah.
So the deal is that the town the county actually deals with the dumpsters or the trash taken out of the town. So I kind of feel like this is something that will probably mostly be addressed even from the county's, I mean, it's already at some point been addressed at the county level, whether they're going to charge a commercial business for more for dumping in a dumpster. So I don't know if we need to really address this at this time.
Yeah, in which case, if the county is willing to accept it in the dumpsters, that would meet the intent of the ordinance that he's got a solid waste disposal plan.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would fulfill the intent, but clearly, the county must have some rules about the use of its facilities. And it might be good to, not just for this particular instance, but since this is going to come up, it might be good to figure out who at the county and county public works or whatnot can say, here's our policy on what waste we do and don't accept in those transfer stations.
It's pretty clear.
That would be David Dodds.
Yeah, Judy, can you address this at all for us to help us? I mean, we at Hills and Hollows have two dumpsters. We asked for another one and they brought one out. Was that the county, Judy?
No, that was me, because we had the tourism that we had. And so they took it back out and they'll probably bring it back in next spring. The only thing that I am aware of on the dumpsters is what you can and cannot put in them. It's just something I think we better find out for sure. And the fact that Ray is going, that's going to be more RVs bringing more people into town to stay, we're going to be accumulating more garbage in the dumpsters. And you've seen them in the summer. So it's really something that needs to be addressed to find out what they're willing to take and what they're willing not to take.
So, and how much they can take. So it seems to me that you're not really, this is a bigger question than about this particular project at this point. And so yeah, I think you need to have a condition in your proceedings tonight that says that, you know, we're going to move forward based on figuring out what the county will and will not accept. And if the county will not accept the waste, then Mr. Gardner has to come up with a plan. Even if the county will accept the waste, somebody has to get it from the RV park to the dumpsters, right? So there is that to think about. And, you know, is that going to be a covered load? This is, you know, it had to happen to somebody that they would be the first project to have to address this. And I think that since no one's clear on the county's situation sitting right here right now, that probably need to have a motion to say, we're going to award this a negative score until we can sort it out. Once we have a satisfactory plan, that'll bump up to zero.
And is this, basically, this is 13B we're talking about, not 13A, which is...
Well, I think it comes under the section that John cited, actually, because that's an absolute that requires a plan. So that's down in 22 somewhere. And you've got your checklist of RV standards that is not shown here. And... But
I okay.
was adopted, so
I'm going to make a suggestion that we, I think we really don't have a buffering and screening issue, but we do need, the motion would be to put as a condition that before startup of the business, the applicant has to show a solid waste management plan, and whatever combination of commercial services and county services he's using is up to him to give us a plan. So that would
that's okay. The basic point.
Was that an official motion, John?
Yeah. So the motion would be that as the condition is that before certificate of occupancy or business license, before final business licensing, a solid waste disposal plan has to be provided.
Okay. I would second that motion. Any discussion, further discussion before we vote on that?
I have a question.
Yes.
So it seems like on that chart that is then an absolute thing rather than a relative thing.
Right.
How does that impact? It seemed like we were able to just give a different score for relative, but how does it impact it if it doesn't meet an absolute thing?
Well, it is absolute once you get down to the RV standards. And so one way to deal with it for an RV park is just to say that number 13 there is not relevant. Give it a zero and say, hey, we're moving on to 22, 22 ENF here. Because that's what controls.
Okay.
That's what controls for this particular project, and it is absolute.
So you're saying that this condition is we're bouncing out of the commercial development standards into the
Part of the RV standards are part of the commercial development standards. They were amended into the same chapter.
And okay. Right there, 22B 7F is where it says there shall be a regular solid waste removal. So, do we even need to make a motion on this? Because it
says the planning commission may, so yes, you need to make a motion.
So the motion, I vote yes. Colleen Thompson, yes.
Okay, Matt Cochran, yes.
Elizabeth still has her hand up.
We're not in a public discussion right now.
That's okay.
Could you vote, Tina?
Yes.
Elena Hughes, yes.
John, yes.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Moving on. So, Lee, disposable food containers aren't an issue.
Don't think so, no.
Okay. Signs. Ray, you've had information about the signs that adheres to the what's applicable to sign ordinance and so on.
Yes, I've read through that, and my design and construction would certainly comply to the sign ordinance.
Okay. Operating hours. So this goes back to what are the operating hours? Is that something that you've considered? Sort of hard for an RV park, right?
Yeah. I think that's moot. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think the nature of the business, I don't know that you can, well, especially if somebody has reservations, that you can say, well, if you don't get here by 10 p.m., you better keep driving. So, no,
right. I haven't.
Yeah, when we work, we're RV parks basically open 24 hours a day. That's why you've got night call numbers and all that.
Right. And without neighbors, it is sort of a moot issue because you're not really disturbing anyone around you except yourselves, I suppose. Yeah.
Standardized.
Drive-in, drive-through doesn't apply. Standardized commercial, what, Lee, that has more to do with franchise. Doesn't really apply.
That was your effort as we finally worked it out to avoid having franchises. So that need not detain us here.
Okay. Accessory dwellings, does that bring in any idea of pavilion or tent cabin sites? Or
no, that would be, accessory dwellings would be for employees.
Okay.
You are allowed, all businesses, RV parks, whatever, are allowed to provide housing for a manager or for employees or for the owner for that matter. And they get some positive points if they do so.
Okay. Ray, are you providing that?
Yes, that plan that I submitted does provide for a manager apartment.
And is that part of the pavilion or something that's a separate building?
No, it's part of the same structure.
Okay.
You're going to need to assign some positive points here because that's something we all agreed was desirable.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we should give it a 2.
I'd give it a 2.
Yep.
So there you go, 6 points.
Okay, for your tent cabin and pavilion, have you considered what material you're using on the exterior?
Yes, as noted in, I think it was in my construction plan, the exterior of the office, restroom, pavilion area, the exterior would be blocked, it would be decorative block. As far as possible future cabins, probably a wood exterior, or at least a wood exterior at this point.
Okay. So non-reflective and basically a natural color?
Correct. Yes, I would like to stay with a natural color, something that would blend in.
Okay, so I would suggest then for reflectivity, like the highest you can get, it gets a 0. It's a sort of a non-issue. And for color, we would go towards a +2.
Well, if you're going to give them a plus, you got to have a specific color in mind. Okay. And I don't know how detailed the plans that he gave you were. So,
he did state it was, I believe, a sand color the pavilion.
Yeah.
Well, then that ought to get some positive points. That was our intent.
Yeah.
Yep, doesn't come in a whole lot of options.
So do you want to go with a two or a one?
I would go a plus one at this point. That's got a fairly heavy weight, so that gives them net four points. And if you know, with a specific color, that could even go up one to a plus two. But I think with a general natural color, a plus one would be good.
I agree with that.
It's tan decorative black exterior and metal earth tone roof.
Okay.
I give it a one.
The one.
Building lines is next.
So,
how big is the pavilion?
It's approximately about just under 1,800 square feet, which includes office rooms, laundry.
So I don't think that the building lines one's going to apply here because this was aimed at big monolithic building lines. I'm trying to break them up. And that building just isn't big enough that you have to worry about it.
Okay, so that would be a zero.
That's a zero. Okay. Not applicable.
Yeah. Detached forms, how does that come into play with...
Well, you'd have to be having multiple buildings for that to apply. And since he only has one building there, you're good with a zero there.
Okay. And local value added doesn't apply, so that would be a zero as well.
Not a retail business, so a zero.
Okay.
Actually, can we go back to 19, the detached forms? Will, if his future plans has cabins, will that affect?
I don't think so, because this was aimed at large buildings and trying to break up the, you know, if a large building has this kind of a monolithic facade, to break it up either using materials or color or varying setbacks. And these cabins, you know, a camper cabin is usually 12 by 20, something like that. It's not going to have an impact of the type that, you know, like if he was building a lumber yard and had a great big lumber shed, we'd have to talk about that. But this is, I think, does not apply to this particular proposal.
Okay.
So I have a 10 between the two pages, positive. And then we had a minus one. So yes, positive nine.
Okay, so we have a positive nine. So unless, you know, there's anything, and I guess I'm asking this question to Lee, anything more to discuss? We've been through the commercial standards and more or less the RV standards. Right. It would be time to open for a public hearing. And then we'd go back into final discussion and vote.
Yeah, no, that's right. The only thing is you should, you know, fill out the checklist with your points and it comes out with a nice positive score based on the decision about color and being non-reflective. I mean, you're getting what you asked for here. And that's the point. So, and then, but you have to make sure that you show that it didn't fail any of the absolutes also.
Okay. Let's see. Do we need to review any of the absolutes? I think we've covered them all.
Yeah.
PC, any further questions on those?
No, I think we're ready for a public hearing.
Okay. Then I'm going to make a motion to open for a public hearing.
Mr. Chairman, am I dismissed?
Thank you, Lee. You're dismissed. I appreciate you jumping on.
Sure.
Yeah.
No problem.
Without notice.
You guys are doing great. It just takes a while to work your way through this.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Would someone second that motion for the public hearing?
Yeah, I'll second that motion.
Okay. So we're now open for a public hearing on Ray Gardner's RV campground.
Matt, you need to make a vote.
I'm sorry. Matt Cochran, all in favor? Matt Cochran, aye.
Dina Carlson, aye. Elena Hughes, aye.
Pauline Thompson, aye.
John Verath, aye.
All right. Apologies for putting the cart in front of the horse. And here we are, open for public comments. Raise your hand digitally. Someone will call on you or unmute yourself.
Don't see any comments, any chat, or any hands. Was it Elizabeth who had her hand up before that we, did you want to make a comment?
I'm all set. I was just going to clear up some information and misinformation about dumpsters, but you all made a resolution and moved on.
Okay. Anybody else want to speak out or raise your hand digitally or however you want to do it? Not seeing any.
Okay, then I'm going to make a motion to close the public hearing.
Second that motion.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Verath, aye.
All right, so we're in a place where, does anyone want to make a motion to approve this cup with conditions?
Matt, one question. Can't find Lee's request about the trees. If you want to make a comment about the types of, I believe it's ash trees. He said that there's the ash borers.
I'm going to take a point of order on that. That I think at this point, that would have been the type of thing someone could have brought up in the public comments. We do not have a tree ordinance. We have gone through the conditional use permit. So I would say that, you know, Ray is perfect, is encouraged to consider Lee's advice, but that's really not in order right at this point when we're approving a CUP.
Ray, has anyone passed Lee's advice on to you about the types of trees that might be better, or was that just sent to us?
No, it was just sent to us. I'll forward it to him.
No, I sent it to Ray. I don't know if you got it, Ray, didn't you?
Yeah, I think he is just trying to save Ray some money down the road by, and I know you're considering that regardless, right, Ray?
Sure, and like I said before, I'm certainly open to suggestions as to what would be the best choice for that location and that purpose. But for the purpose of the CUP, I obviously had to fill in the blank, so to speak. But yeah, I'd like to hear some input on what might work better than.
Yeah. And not being an arborist on the PC, I actually have no knowledge on what the right thing is. So I sort of want to follow John's thing and just move on with the proposing a motion to pass the CUP.
I will make a motion to approve the CUP with the one condition we approved, to that a waste management plan needs to be submitted before startup of the campground.
Okay, I'll second that motion. And now for the PC, we're open for discussion. Comments, questions? Amendments. Do you feel, to the best of your knowledge, it fulfills all the conditions that we've run through?
I do.
Yeah, I think we've had a very thorough and productive discussion, and I thank our staff for all their support in getting us through it.
Right.
All right. Okay, then I'm going to call to vote. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Nick Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Verath, aye.
All right. Mr. Gardner, step one of 100.
Thanks, Ray.
I appreciate your time. Yeah, there's been it's been quite an educational process
for all of us.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Appreciate your patience. Thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Planning Commission, for and public for bearing with us on that. And we're going to move on to our next item on the agenda, which is really brief discussion on the hydrology. I've been in contact with John Files, but our proposal from him is not forthcoming yet. So unless there's any discussion from the PC on following out this hydrology proposal, we're going to bump it to February meeting.
Works for me.
Good.
Any comments?
Okay. Then moving on, we're going to spend a little time here on the subdivision streets and roads, which is just a discussion this evening in order to prepare for February's meeting with Lee on there. And I'm going to turn this over to you, to John, who has done a lot of the legwork and is providing a few options to consider on passing that language forward to Lee to write up for approval in February.
Okay. I prepared, I guess I can bring it up, a fairly lengthy document, which is on the meeting website, where I basically went through the ordinance and looked at it. What would it look like under one option, which would be that allows private driveways? And then also how it would look, how we'd have to mark it up if we require public streets. I mean, that's really the fundamental decision. Previously I went through a discussion last month of the pros and cons of private streets versus or private driveways, that there's kind of a middle ground, which is privately owned HOA managed type streets or public streets. And really I've been thinking about how that reflects the general plan and the character of Boulder, because I think personally, if you just ask me in the abstraction, I really like public streets, every lot fronting on a public street. It solves a lot of problems. It creates a very friendly town, but that's also very different than all our historic practice in Boulder. And, maybe what would be very productive, I think we have three town council members on the call, is to kind of get some feedback from them. If the town is adamantly opposed to creating new public streets that the town maintains, then we can take that off any further discussion in terms of what the, how we would draft an ordinance. On the other hand, if the town's thinks that private roads are ending up causing problems, we can go that way. So I think we've had some recent examples like the Wilson Road, where when the road isn't accurately surveyed and everyone knows what its legal status is and where it is, problems occur. I think the main issue that I learned in the last month of talking to people is the public safety issue. After this fire in Denver, or in Boulder, Colorado, fire truck access is extremely important around houses. And I realized we've already adopted the Utah Urban Interface Code, which sort of sets a floor for what we could allow as private driveways, is that it needs to meet those requirements in terms of being wide enough for a fire truck, high enough clearance under the trees for fire trucks, turn out so that vehicles can pass on it if it's more than a certain length and so forth. So that's sort of, where I think we should start the discussion. So which way do we want to go? Do we want to allow private driveways on subdivisions of four or fewer lots, which is the past practice, or do we want to go the way Lee Nellis had suggested, which is to require a public street, everything fronting on a public dedicated street? My first feeling is that the private street, where it's separated from the lots, but then managed by the homeowners, has the worst of both worlds. You've got all the potential for conflict that you would have with a private driveway, and really none of the advantages. Our town ordinances do say that the town can require a plan for permanent maintenance of a new street, if it's a private street. So, I suggested that if we're allowing private driveways, we need to define what a private driveway access easement is, and then have wording in there, which is a little further down, I guess almost a page down, that says that in subdivisions with four or fewer lots, the access to each lot may be either by frontage on an existing public street or from a private driveway access easement that meets the requirements of the Utah Urban or Wildland Urban Interface Code. Maintenance of private driveway access is the responsibility of the owners. So I think that's the philosophical discussion, and maybe we could invite some of the town council members here to weigh in a little bit on what they see as what they're willing to support.
Yeah, so I didn't see who was here, but I think Judy or Elizabeth, you know, what's your feeling on?
I think Jim's here too.
Yeah, and Jim, yeah.
Yes, I'm on here.
Is the discussion clear? Yeah.
Gladys is here too.
What's that?
Okay, number one, we'd have to get a feeling of what we're looking at for private driveways, because infrastructure wise, you're talking a lot of streets, I believe, but we won't know that. Those that have been here longer probably have a better feel than I do. I'm with John, I mean, to a certain extent, because we do have to take in safety concerns and the emergency plan. You know, we want to make sure that we have addresses and ways for our emergency equipment to get in and out and to recognize these streets. So I think it's not going to be a quick fix. It's going to be something we're going to have to investigate in, find out what the town wants. Also, what maybe people have some good ideas on doing that. Being on the Garfield Planning Commission and private roads, they do have their share of problems. One of the problems is nobody specifies what they want or who's maintaining or what portion belongs to who. And that has been a big problem. So that's my thought.
Jimmy or Elizabeth, any thoughts?
Gladys has her hand raised. She's coming to a mic.
Okay, first of all, John, I apologize. I didn't bring my glasses, so I haven't time to read through your thing. I'd like to read through it. But there is a serious problem with public streets, and that's the expense of maintaining them and keeping them up to the standards that the, quote, public expects. I think this discussion is definitely looked through, because the truth of the matter is, if Boulder had to maintain the roads that they have that are public roads right now, there's no way we could do it. We have to appreciate the fact that snow removal is a courtesy of the county. We have absolutely no road equipment or the people to operate the equipment. Those are all things you would have to look through if you have public roads. Another thing, if you went to public roads, I think the town would definitely have to put restrictions on where you could build, because you'd have to build where the town could provide you a public road. Now, that's not saying I'm entirely against them, because I do recognize there are problems with private roads. But this is definitely something that needs to be looked into, and it isn't something we could decide right away. Thank you.
Thank you, Gladys.
This is kind of the situation I think that would be helpful, and I contacted Caden about, you know, having some kind of ability to communicate issues that are county and town related, like the dumpsters and the roads and that kind of thing. And so it would be nice to have some kind of interaction with the county in some ways to discuss some of the issues that we are actually sharing somewhat as far as roads and our garbage, so we know what to expect or what to ask for.
And so I have a question, and this might go back to you guys on town council too, is part of the issue is what would happen if it was split on some level, like private driveways for smaller subdivisions of four lots and under, and then public streets for some much larger type subdivision.
I think that's essentially what I've proposed under option one, that we do have a whole bunch of standards for big that apply to big subdivisions. And it's really, do we continue the practice of allowing these smaller informal subdivisions, which I think give Boulder a lot of its character, these quiet driveways that you kind of wonder where they go, and then you look and see a house off in the distance. We are proposing to split it, because if as you get into the bigger subdivisions, as I started looking at what other towns are doing, and also when I was talking with both Pete and with Jim, you know, it's not good to have a big subdivision like we have up in Boulder King Estates with only one access to the highway. In a fire situation, that's a pretty bad pretty dicey design. So I think for bigger subdivisions, there's a lot of things we need to look at in terms of creating landlocked parcels, emergency access, and so forth. But I think, you know, the intent of these immediate subdivision amendments was to basically facilitate when somebody wants the types of subdivisions that we have been doing here in Boulder, where you split up a parcel and put a couple houses on two lots or three lots. So that's what my option one is to allow driveways for four or fewer houses, which also meets the urban interface code. They say you can have a driveway for up to five dwellings.
I think, John, that maybe that part wasn't clear when we initially asked the town council members on the call to state their opinions. I feel like we went maybe a little, because we've been talking about it, we maybe went a little, not off track, but we zoomed out a little too far and made this about, do we need public roads everywhere? Whereas this is, we've been addressing this issue of should smaller subdivisions have slightly less stringent rules, so that if you are just taking one piece of land and dividing it in two, you don't need to build a city road through it. And not only need to as the owner, but also so that the town isn't taking care of that and all of that. So with this language, it still allows for that on subdivisions of four or less lots. And I think at the bottom of that, you also suggested, John, that we go back to it for larger subdivisions at another time. Is that right?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of issues that we have. Our current ordinances for subdivision are sufficiently restrictive that there isn't a great deal of urgency in amending them right this month, because we've got some horrendous project being proposed that we don't want to slip in ahead of us. But we certainly in the long term do have to look at larger subdivisions. That's the biggest thing that could change Boulder Town. So yeah, this is focused on allowing informal private driveways on small subdivisions, minor subdivisions, which has been the practice in the ordinance.
Elizabeth, Julian, you had your hand up.
I was just going to say, I mean, if you're asking for input from town council, I do think that, you know, what you're addressing is to the point that there's not a one size fits all, right? When you're talking about a subdivision and a private driveway that is an access to very few lots, you know, you're talking about a property being divided just into 2 5-acre lots, which is the minimum currently, that's a different story. And so it needs to be addressed, and to required to be a private driveway is a burden both on the town and the landowners.
Private driveway.
No, to make it a public, road.
Yeah.
Is,
yeah.
Is an in like my initial opinion is it's an undue burden on the town and on the private landowners to make that happen. And that, so you need to recognize that a private driveway is not a road, right? A road accesses multiple properties. And so when you're using the subdivision at the north end of town that John brought up, that's not a private driveway. That's access to streets. And that's there needs to be a distinction between those two scenarios.
Fully agree.
And I agree with what Elena was saying. When we started in with the subdivision ordinance, we're just trying to change. We dove into it because we're trying to update some language in it. And that was what we were trying to specifically do, was to take that one small section that Elena was talking about and to take some language out of it.
Yeah.
That was it. We have kind of scoped way out on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's let Jimmy weigh in here. He's got his hand up.
So
let me clear on the subdivision for up here. We did have two exits on here until Dan Gardner bought half of the subdivision and unsubdivided that part of it. So the second driveway was actually his driveway coming out of the subdivision. Hmm. So what we need to do, which I would suggest, would put something in there to where it protects the town and the people in the subdivision. If you're going to have a bigger subdivision, make sure that they have a roundabout out both ways so that doesn't happen again, to where you're not just deadlocked in here.
Right.
Because I trust me, I see the traffic.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but no, that'd be my suggestion. And the private roads, I think I definitely agree with keeping them private because the town doesn't need any more big hassle.
Do you have, what about somewhere in the middle there? So with like larger subdivisions, would you be in favor of public roads or private drives there?
Well, depending on the size of the subdivision, you're almost going to have to go to town streets anyway because of the infrastructure that's going to be going in. So you're going to have different right-of-ways for your water, for anything that starts coming in. That Boulder's going to have to start looking at a sewer treatment plant. I mean, if you want to go down the start looking at different stuff that we're looking at. So,
yeah,
I mean, it just depends on like how big it is, how many houses are planned. I mean, where is it located?
Yeah, this seems about finding what the right balance is between these two things. It seems to like the direction that I'm getting that we should run with.
Correct. I agree. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
So what, I guess to get back on the topic, the reason what happened was in October, we passed the previous planning commission before I was on, sent to town council an ordinance that got sent back for further work. But the implication of that, I guess it was actually at my first meeting that we passed it, was that we clarified the definition of streets and roads and easements, but then the language that Lean Ellis gave us, as he put in his remarks, eliminated private streets. which kind of undid what we were trying to accomplish. So from what I'm hearing tonight, I think what we should do is take that off. I think where everyone's leaning toward the option one, which is allowing private driveways in minor subdivisions. And as I got into it, I realized our ordinances, there are a lot of things that are referred to in different places, and you've got to be sure that you change everything consistently. But I would suggest that we wordsmith the option one. I do want to talk about lot one other item, which is the 1-to-3 ratio, and have that as a cleaned up draft ordinance that we could take to public hearing for February. The reason I want to talk about this 1-to-3, it causes a lot of problems.
Well, John, let's just, for this first part, let's plan. How about, will you take on, and I can help too, working with Lee to get the language of this ready for February. And, and so then there's, you have one more thing you want to discuss now, and then let's start wrapping this discussion up as we're getting close to 3 hours here.
The reason for the 1-to-3, Elena was the one who, I guess in her discussion with Lee Nellis, it came up, allowing flag lots, which we talked about the last time.
Okay, and you're talking about dimensions of properties at this point.
Yeah,
right.
That if you could, the 1-to-3 prohibits creative solutions that, like a flag lot where you have a narrow portion of a lot reaching the back part of a 10-acre parcel. The other thing is that really, I've always felt our ordinances in Boulder encourage taking nice flat farmland and chopping it up into suburb type squares. And, you know, by removing that 1-to-3 ratio requirement, it allows things like lots that reflect the terrain following a stream or a cliff line. So it's something that we should, but it would also help address this problem of frontage, that there would be other ways to get frontage besides long driveways. So. Okay.
Well, I think it's a discussion that warrants further attention. In the meantime, can we do some research work on it?
Yes.
And maybe provide something to the Planning Commission? Because I've known here is the 1-to-3, and I'm not even sure of what exactly the rationale is for it. It would be interesting to get some professional advice on that from someone perhaps like Lee and others.
Sure.
It's also possible, because Lee brought that up in regards to flag lots, and it's possible that there's a way he knows to do flag lots without changing that. I think that's a discussion we should have with Lee though, probably.
Yeah. So how about Elena would be willing to follow that out as well and report back to us on help with that at least? Yeah.
I personally don't feel comfortable in having a public, like going forward. I feel like there's just a lot of discussion on just what we were trying to accomplish when we started this. Like, to go back with what Elena said, I'd like to go back to that and look at that before we go any farther with anything else. That's what I'm comfortable with myself.
What are you referring to? Because the original intent was to clarify, make some clarifications that avoided barriers to subdividing. And
will you bring up kind of what we say that again?
Okay, so what I'm basically recommending is that from the October draft, we basically put back in the old provision was that the Planning Commission had considerable discretion with regard to subdivisions of four or fewer lots. And the Mark McKiff's concern was considerable discretion is a kind of a vague term to put in an ordinance. So in effect, what I'm simply doing is putting it in as that private driveways are allowed for subdivisions of four or fewer lots.
So, and all I'm saying really is that I'd like to discuss it a little bit more next month instead of it going to a public hearing. I'd like to just, I feel like sometimes, like even tonight, like we took a big chunk going through the commercial standards. We're very new at all this information, and I just want, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying or what you put forth. I'd like to read it a little bit more, and just discuss it a little bit more. I don't know that I'm ready to see it go before a public hearing. That's all that I'm
saying. Okay.
So Colleen, John, yeah. Can I respond?
Go ahead.
Colleen, I think that basically what we're trying to do is just help Lee make new language so that when he's back, since he's been gone from us for 2 months, when he's back on at our beginning of our meeting next time, that he has language ready that we can approve. It's not going to public hearing or town council yet, but this last section of this meeting has been very confusing. I understand that part. So basically, I think what we're trying to do is determine amongst ourselves, and we should probably do that now, hear from all five of us and see, determine amongst ourselves what which way we're leaning towards option one or option two, and if we'd like to have we work on the language if we're all in agreement. It sounds like people prefer option one, and if they do all prefer that, just have Lee work on the language so that we can actually take a look at it next time.
Thank you, Elena. Does that make sense, Colleen?
Yeah, I actually gave my paper to Gladys, so I don't have it in front of me, so I'll make another copy of it. Sorry.
So personally, I'm in favor of option one there, and it needs some work, but I'm leaning on that for, you know, for all the reasons that people have brought up today.
I lean towards option one as well. And full disclosure, I am hoping to subdivide a small piece of land into two parcels that this would impact.
Okay. So Elena, are you feeling comfortable being the point person for Lee, or would you like it?
If you guys are okay with it, I'm okay with it, just because I feel like I'm familiar with the language because I've been looking into it and talking to him. I also feel like it's something that's important regardless of my project, and my project might be able to happen without it. I feel okay with it if you guys do, but
that's fine. I just
wanted to. Okay. I'm perfectly comfortable in you taking what I marked up as option one and taking it from there, and you and Lee work on it.
Okay.
Tina?
Great. I just wanted to put that out there.
No, and where are you in option one and option two, Tina?
Oh, I'm sorry. One seems, I'll go with that. I'll go with the crew.
Okay. So sounds like we have a plan. Thank you, Planning Commission. And yeah, it's a good start. There's work to do. Okay. So that ends most of our things, I think. Let's see, do we do upcoming business before final public comment, Peg?
Yes, do that.
Okay, so upcoming business for February, let's put it on the table here. We're going to have this discussion, on option one. Elena is going to take point working with Lee on the languaging of it, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Another thing on upcoming business is to, I'm going to follow out the hydrology proposal with John Files and see if I can get that on the table. What else?
Matt, there may be another rental coming in either February or March.
Another what coming in?
Short-term rental.
Okay.
Sorry, I missed that. I couldn't hear.
There may be another short-term rental application coming in February or March.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, Matt. I got a question or a comment for you.
Yes, Jimmy.
The Boulder Farm said we actually have a 40-year water plan that we're working on with Jones and DeMille right now that's in the process of getting finished. So as soon as I get that, I can actually pull a bunch of our information for the hydrologic study that you need instead of trying to, it's a
great,
it's a bigger plan, but then it's going to be like,
okay. And what do you think the ETA is on that?
I've already seen the first copy of it, and we're fixing all the numbers that they didn't have right on, and we're sending it back to them. So as soon as they get it back printed to us, we'll have it.
Okay, I'll check in with you before February meeting, and then because that would be helpful information for us for sure.
So if I get it before, if I get it before then, I can just let you know also.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Matt, I have a question for you. I don't know if this is a good time for this, but in earlier in the meeting, we were talking about kind of the setup of meetings and timings and things. I don't know if this is a ridiculous suggestion, but I'm wondering, like, these meetings that we that are taking this long and we expect to take this long, would it be unreasonable or would it be allowed to, like, almost have a couple minute intermission? I feel like our brains get really fried by the end. I could use like a glass of water and I'm cold. I could use a I just haven't been comfortable walking away from the computer because I haven't meant to miss something, but I have to pee and could use water.
Yeah. All you have to do is make a motion to recess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Robert's rules.
Okay. I didn't know if I was allowed.
And you have permission to step away, but I mean, I figured this is going to be 2 hours tops and you know how it goes. So, no, I hear you on that. I will try and be more cognizant of it and put something halfway through if that's the case. So thank you. Any other upcoming business? Peg, or do you think is there anything else? Any procedural stuff we got to do or are we good?
I believe we're good. We've covered all the necessary training. I think you're good to go here.
Okay, great. Okay, so do I have to make a motion to open up for public comment or not?
No, that's just part of your agenda. I do have a question. Assuming that you want to keep as part of your procedure the initial and the final comments?
I'd like to keep the final comments, the final public comments.
Okay. Okay.
I think we've sort of abandoned the, not by choice, but the initial public comments.
It's hard to work it in when Lee has a time.
Yeah. And usually, and at least from experience, we really have seen rarity there. But, you know, I think just being cognizant if someone needs to say something and leave, then it's just something that we can be aware of.
Yeah.
But I don't want it formalized. So, Okay. So I'm going to open up final public comments. Please jump in. Let's see, would that be Donna? Looks like have your hand raised.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, because the 3-to-1 was brought up briefly, that I do think it's rather restrictive when it comes to topography, but it was put in for a reason, and that's those subdivisions just north of you, Matt, when those long skinny strips were made, then the town did a reactionary ordinance and put the 3-to-1 in. But I've seen already, you know, in when we looked at possibly subdividing Deer Ranch and over when Ray Nelson was trying to subdivide, it can become problematic. And especially with the topography in Boulder and the terrain that we have here, I think maybe you could do something instead of just eliminating it, allow a revision where the Planning Commission had a way of, if there was mitigating circumstances, they could work around it. So that if there really was, just almost like the Board of Adjustments has, if there really is trees and or streams or rocks, you know, maybe they don't have to comply with that. I don't know, just an idea on and when you go to look at that again.
Thank you, Donna. Yeah, appreciate that. And actually considering that, John, in that dimension, that should be part of the upcoming business, but it will include that within the road subdivision discussion.
Yeah.
Does that work?
Yeah, I think that's really the word belongs.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Any other public comments?
I have one if nobody else does. I'm not seeing others yet.
Yeah, go ahead, Peg.
First of all, public hearings are not, I mean, you can have a public hearing for the purpose of gathering public comment and you're not required to vote or approve or anything immediately after a public hearing. So you can use it as a tool to actually get input from the citizens. Hmm. That's just one thing to think, keep in mind. It's not like a final step before you approve, in other words. And the other thing is I want to reiterate to everyone, it seems like it's most, well, everyone should know by now that all of the documents that we use in the meetings are posted online on the meeting site of the Planning Commission page. So that's for public, that's for your use as well, since I don't really print all this stuff out for everybody again. I was having difficulty juggling all the documents that were needed tonight to work through the discussion on race thing in particular. But if it's possible for you to bring that up and look at them ahead of time, or bookmark them, or print them if you like looking at printed material, they are available online, all the meeting materials for a meeting. So just so you are all aware of that.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay.
I think it'll make it a lot easier for me if I have them printed out.
And it might be helpful in the future if we have, I mean, I don't know how often we make new charts like that, but it might be helpful in the future if we have, when something new like that comes up, like a quick training meeting with Lee to run us through, like to kind of practice run us through the chart. Cause I had looked at it and everything, but I wasn't quite sure how it, like what happens if you don't meet one of the absolute standards and how do you decide -2 to +2?
Yeah, you're right. And we've had those in the past, but this has been the first sort of live one. And I'm not quite happy with the performance of it, but I'll figure out a way to streamline that.
So I mean, we also have many new, like most of us are new members, some their first meeting, some we've only been a few times. It was your first one as chair. Like it was, Ray was a trooper coming on this time.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's see. I think that's it. Thank you, Peg. Thank Matt, you, April. Yes.
I have a question. After we're completed, can I talk to you for just a few minutes?
Yes, I'll stay on.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
So, I think that's it. Thank you everyone for hanging in there. Sorry about the 3-hour meeting. Next time we'll have a break halfway through. We'll have to infer what halfway is, but we'll figure it out. Okay.
I'll make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Yeah. Okay. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Tina, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Shelley, will you just give me your contact information so I can get you outside of this?